WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In his new biography of Alberto Gonzalez, called The President's Counselor, Bill Minutaglio writes that Gonzalez has crafted and processed the most secretive and controversial directives in modern U.S. history, but he has somehow managed to remain the most hidden member of the Bush family's inner circle. Gonzalez's career has been closely linked to George W. Bush since Bush's gubernatorial campaign. Under Governor Bush, Gonzalez was legal counsel, Secretary of State, and was appointed to the Texas Supreme Court. When President Bush went to the White House, Gonzalez moved to Washington to become White House counsel, and last year he became the first Hispanic to serve as Attorney General. Before writing a book about Gonzalez, Minutaglio wrote the book First Son, George W. Bush and the Bush Family Dynasty. Minutaglio was a reporter for the Dallas Morning News from 1983 to 2001. President Bush first got to know Alberto Gonzalez when Gonzalez was working at a law firm in Houston called Vinson and Elkins. And this is a big firm that represented Enron, Halliburton, and Brown and Root. What kind of work was Gonzalez doing there?
You know, they used to call Vinson and Elkins Vinson and Enron, you know, pejoratively, nicknamed V&E, Vinson and Enron. The Elkins was subbed out and Enron was put in. He did a little bit of everything. He was in an area of the law firm. And it was one of these mega firms where there were hundreds of attorneys, primarily based in Houston, but in other important political and kind of economic capitals around the country and even overseas. He did. He was assigned to a group called the Transactions Team, and he was a transactions lawyer. And he basically drew up contracts and negotiated real estate deals, petrochemical deals, very, very high-end bits of business involving some of those companies you just mentioned.
And how did he start to work with George W. Bush and Karl Rove?
In Houston, you know, it's America's fourth largest city, but in some ways it's a small town. Everybody knows everybody at a certain level above the cloud line. And as you ascend in prominence at a place like V&E, Vinson and Elkins, and then dip your toe into political circles, as Gonzalez was showing some interest in the late 80s and early 90s, his name just sort of gusted forward. And quite frankly, there was a concerted effort by Karl Rove and George W. Bush and even the elder George Bush to identify suitable minority figures whom they could draw into the Republican Party and use in some dimension, politically speaking, to advance their agenda in Texas and even nationally. And that's how Gonzalez came on the radar. His first encounter with the Bush family was with the elder George Bush, when the elder George Bush spoke to colleagues and friends in Houston and literally said, "Do you know of any good prominent Latinos who might make members of my administration, my presidential administration in the late 80s and early 90s?" And Gonzalez was offered some positions by the elder George Bush to come to Washington, but turned them down but remained on the radar. And his son later on identified or remembered Alberto Gonzalez.
You make it sound in your book as if the relationship between George W. Bush and Alberto Gonzalez got started as a result of Karl Rove's feelings that in order for George W. Bush to rise to power, he needed more support among evangelicals and Hispanics.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was carefully deliberated and orchestrated and talked about that beginning here in Texas and then later on nationally, the Republicans would want to steal the middle ground, so to speak, as they called it, and then cater to Latino voters by arguing that they had a socially conservative agenda that might actually be appealing to a greater majority or a greater number of Latino voters than maybe some Republican strategists had previously assumed. And again, Alberto Gonzalez just seemed like a perfect person to kind of put that agenda on his back and push him forward. He, you know, admittedly was a very, very reluctant participant in some of this early on. I think he was intrigued by the proximity to power and the entreaties, the visits from the Bush family, but he's not, and I think to this day remains a distinctly almost non-public public figure, if that makes sense.
Let's go through the positions that Alberto Gonzalez held in Governor Bush's administration. Starting with general counsel to the governor, what's one of the more interesting things you think he did in that role that have shaped your impression of him?
In Gonzalez's tenure as counsel to then-Governor Bush, he produced or oversaw clemency recommendations in 57 death penalty cases. In other words, he was processing and looking at paperwork for 57 death row inmates. All of those were basically sent to Bush with a sense that these executions should go forward. There wasn't one of the 57 in which Gonzalez stated that, I think we should pause, I think we should grant a 30-day reprieve and review and almost challenge whether or not this execution should go forward. I found that extremely profound. And one thing that I came across in my research that I hadn't been aware of before, I'm not sure that too many other people had known about, was the fact that Gonzalez had attended an execution in Texas and I think was able to witness firsthand the complexity, the wide array of emotions that go into an execution here. And for some reason, I think as a biographer and a historian, I was looking for some of that emotional quotient and for lack of a better word, almost a poetic, deeper sense in his memos to Bush about the death penalty. And I thought that would speak to just the challenges that go into deciding whether someone should live and die and whether you're recommending to the governor that you stay in execution at least for 30 days. And I didn't see that there as much as I think just personally I would have hoped for.
Tell us something about what Gonzalez did as Secretary of State in Texas that helped shape your impression of him.
Sure. Yeah. As Secretary of State in Texas, Gonzalez, I think it was a politicizing period in his life. It was a moment when he had to begin going out in public. As Governor Bush's counsel, he did a lot of his work, in-house, behind closed doors, sometimes in courtrooms, and just sort of out of sight, off the radar, or below the radar. As Secretary of State, he was forced for the first time really in his life to go out and grip and grin and pose with babies and take pictures and this and that and do a lot of politics. And I think he understood at that point in his life that he was off on a whole different tangent. If he had ever had any inclinations in his life to view the law and the practice of law as sort of a higher, almost artistic kind of calling, I think a lot of that began slipping away a little bit when he had to go out as Secretary of State in Texas. It's a kind of a showcase job in the sense that you go out, not a lot of wielding of power, but you almost raise the profile of the governor by being his roving ambassador and try to drum up votes. And as well, frankly, a lot of his utility within the Bush network and the Bush family, the Bush dynasty at that point was coming to fruition. He was out as Secretary of State in a unique position, according to Karl Rove and George W. Bush, to draw more Latino voters to the Republican Party.
President Bush appointed Alberto Gonzalez to the Texas State Supreme Court. Was that a controversial appointment?
It was controversial in the sense that he wasn't seen as an arching, legal visionary. His appointment to the Texas Supreme Court was challenged by some folks who had wished that Bush had picked someone who was a great legal mind and was a great legal scholar. And Gonzalez just simply didn't have that reputation. He had a reputation as a dogged, very, very loyal and good corporate attorney and someone who was fiercely loyal to George W. Bush. So if there was controversy here about his appointment to the Texas Supreme Court, it stemmed from the fact that he seemed like a Bush insider without a great, wide swath of legal experience being appointed to the highest court in Texas.
My guest is Bill Minutaglio, author of the new book, The President's Counselor, The Rise to Power of Alberto Gonzalez. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Bill Minutaglio. His new book is called The President's Counselor, The Rise to Power of Alberto Gonzalez. After George W. Bush was elected president, he made Alberto Gonzalez his White House counsel. Did you learn any of the behind-the-scenes reasons that went into that appointment?
Yeah, absolutely. Among the many reasons that George W. Bush wanted Alberto Gonzalez to come to Washington with him as his White House counsel, ironically, he was heartily recommended by Harriet Myers, who had been a kind of a mentor to Gonzalez in Texas. She had once been George W. Bush's personal attorney here in Texas, and then when an opening emerged for a governor's council in Texas, she recommended Alberto Gonzalez when Bush was going to Washington and casting about and asking people who he should bring with him to Washington. Harriet Myers, among many people, said, yeah, you should bring Alberto Gonzalez yet again and let him be your counsel in the White House as well. Again, most Bush insiders have told me that there was a unique political dimension. It was a moment for Bush to name the first Latina White House counsel. It was a great way to position Alberto Gonzalez for two or three political steps down the road and have him begin to raise his profile nationally and position himself for elected office nationally, maybe even back here in Texas at the gubernatorial or Senate level. But yet as well, maybe to position Alberto Gonzalez for a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court.
You make it seem in your book like perhaps a couple of reasons why he remained so close to President Bush and why President Bush made him White House counsel was because he was already very protective of the president, and also he didn't compete for the limelight.
One thing that's, again, critics and adherents of Alberto Gonzalez all agree upon is that he grew up authentically as the son of poorly educated and economically poor migrant workers. His father was an alcoholic who had only had a second grade education. His mother had only gone to school through the sixth grade. And Alberto Gonzalez grew up in a bubbling, you know, wild environment in a city, Houston, Texas, where people were making money left and right in the 1980s. And the real go-go years in Texas and just wild, over the top, almost cowboy Caligulas in Texas, just like something out of the old television show Dallas or Dynasty, if you will. And he grew up in this environment really, really poor. He grew up in a home with no hot running water. There was no telephone in his home right up through his high school years. He used to have to go down to the corner to make telephone calls. And you know, at some point in his life in the 1980s and then into the 1990s, he was the edge of the gilded tent was cracked open for him, and he was allowed into the Bush network. It was just a startling and life-changing experience for him, and I think he felt forever grateful and some critics would say slavishly loyal to George W. Bush.
What would you say is the most important part Alberto Gonzalez has played in defining executive powers for the president after September 11th?
As an outgrowth of his loyalty to George W. Bush, and then as an outgrowth of what he and some of the folks who were advising him as co-counsels in the White House believed, they were hell-bent, in a sense, in expanding presidential authority and presidential power. They would argue not to the dereliction of faith, legal faith to the Constitution and our laws, but to really be, quote, forward-leaning, to really try to find the nuances, again, critics would say the loopholes, in laws and statutes that would give the president the muscle, the might, the power to fight terrorism on any level, whether it be prosecuting the war on terror with the secret military tribunals, studying the exact tenets of the Geneva Conventions to see if they were applicable or not to enemy combatants, folks that we would be detaining in the war on terror, to domestic spying, looking at bank records, phone calls, everything else. There was a lot of discussion at all levels of the executive branch about what exactly it meant in terms of the beginning and end of presidential powers, where what was too expansive, what was just appropriate, what was right.
President Bush was considering the possibility of nominating Gonzalez to the Supreme Court. That would have been very controversial among conservatives because of one of Gonzalez's opinions when he was in the Texas State Supreme Court. Would you talk a little bit about his opinion in that decision?
In Texas, when Alberto Gonzalez was on the Texas Supreme Court, the Supreme Court had to weigh in on an abortion-related decision. And in a nutshell, if you review the case and the specifics, and it was an enormously complex case. And it was loosely related to the fact that down here in Texas, something called the Parental Notification Act had been passed. Broadly speaking, it required minors to tell their parents and their health care providers to tell the parents of the minors that a minor was seeking an abortion. If you really read the way that Gonzalez weighed in on the case, it could be interpreted that he was upholding abortion rights. And whether that's true or not, and it's a matter of some debate, because he put in some qualifying language in his opinion that seemed to cater to both sides of the issue, the net political effect of the whole matter is that by the time he wound up in Washington and wound up on the short list for the Supreme Court of the United States, leading conservative activists and commentators, including Robert Novak, seized upon that decision and some of the language in Gonzalez's opinion back in Texas to underscore their belief that he might be supporting abortion as opposed to being an arch enemy of abortion. And it became really probably the death knell for Alberto Gonzalez, I think, in terms of his ascension to the Supreme Court.
President Bush has talked about how much faith is a part of his life. A lot of the people who are close to him share his faith or share deep feelings about faith. What about Alberto Gonzalez? What did you learn about his religious life and how close it is or isn't to the president's?
Alberto Gonzalez grew up ardently Catholic in an ardently, you know, Catholic community. He was a Catholic church-going, you know, youth. He was one of eight children in his family. They were very, very close to the Catholic Church. They knew the parish priest and just grew up in an extensive religious environment and a migrant worker Catholic religious environment. What I found, you know, incredibly interesting again, in terms of a socio-cultural evolution, the more that he got to know George W. Bush and the more that he went deeper into that kind of gilded tent again that George W. Bush opened up for him, the more his denominational tendencies changed. And, you know, at present, he worships at what some people call kind of a power conservative church in Virginia that's populated by a kind of a Protestant Episcopalian congregation, and that is also populated in the pews by a lot of powerful conservatives, former head of the CIA and conservative commentators and conservative speechwriters and so forth. So his practical application of faith has actually become more like George W. Bush's in a sense, denominationally speaking. He's moved away from the Catholic religion and become more of an Episcopal attendee.
Were you able to get an interview with Alberto Gonzalez for your book about him?
No, I tried repeatedly. I'd say probably for 5 months running, posing that question and literally dozens, if not hundreds, of questions to his aides. Received answers to a few questions, ones that I actually, frankly, already knew the answers to.
What's the question you most wish he'd answered of yours?
I'd like to know whether or not he truly believes in all of George W. Bush's policies and philosophies, and whether the way that he ascended to power can be easily replicated by other people in the United States, and especially people who grew up in similar circumstances.
And you want to know if he's an independent thinker or if he's basically a good soldier.
That's the question for the ages. I'd love to sit down with him here in Texas and explore that, you know, in an open, honest way, whether he's just a rubber stamp advisor or whether he feels that he's providing authentic, you know, independent legal advice. And again, not just simply in pursuit of the answers that the president, wants, a predetermined answer, but whether he's giving him, you know, really the full breadth of history and legal knowledge so that the president can make an informed decision.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks a lot, Terry. It was great to talk to you.
Bill Minutaglio is the author of the new book, The President's Counselor, The Rise to Power of Alberto Gonzalez. Coming up, linguist Jeff Nunberg considers the sometimes outrageous rhetoric of TV political pundits. This is Fresh Air.